Welcome to the Independent Artist Podcast, sponsored by the National Association of Independent Artists.
Also sponsored by Zapplication. I'm Will Armstrong, and I'm a mixed media artist.
I'm Douglas Sigworth, glassblower. Join our conversations with professional working artists. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Will, how's it going, man?
It's fine.
Okay, that's all we got.
All right, good talk. See you next week, everyone.
We've used that shtick a few times, but it never gets old.
No, not with me. I mean, it's honest.
It's honest.
Right.
Well, you're squeezing in your record this week with Annie just a few minutes ago, and now we are doing the preamble. So now this week, I'm not listening to the recording before we talk.
Yeah, you can just gush and gush about how great it is, and we just spent the last hour just, talking about Netflix.
Okay, well, no. You know.
Not really.
Well, I will say this is your best talk ever, and...
Yeah, so it's good to be back here. It's been a challenging past few weeks, unexpectedly so, and
I'm not going to catch any of your COVID cooties over the internet here, am I?
I'm well done with my COVID cooties, sir. I hooked the garden hose up to my nostrils and washed the whole carcass clean.
I'm sorry you had to go through that. What's going on with that? What happened?
It was honestly the biggest bummer of my artistic career. I made it all the way back to the East Coast to go do Artisphere.
After a lot of cross-country traveling, you had
there was a lot of
ping
pong going back and forth. You can't just take the center out of a train track. You have to actually ride through the entire thing. So by the time I was actually on the train, I couldn't stop. It's like I had plane tickets and I had to take my truck all the way back to the East Coast, not just for Artisphere, but for my wife and for ACC Baltimore that's coming up for her. I had her booth in the back of my truck. And so it was just the whole convoluted thing. Like I got all the way back to Commerce, Georgia. There's like a little cheaper Fairfield Inn right there. And I was like, I'll just spend the night here, travel in for Thursday for my setup. Went to the bar, had myself a little burger and a beer, got about halfway through my burger, didn't want any more, got about halfway through my beer and was like, gosh, I don't feel like drinking this beer either. So I just got my tab and I left, got back to the room and started feeling worse and worse. And by the time I was ready for bed, I pulled out one of those COVID tests and took it positive. Hung it up, you know, couldn't go to Artisphere, had to let them know, didn't get to see my folks. They were coming down from Richmond to see. I haven't seen them in over a year. I mean, I had to cancel everything.
So literally setup was the next day and you were just stopped in your tracks?
Yeah, this was Wednesday night. God. Wednesday night and then Thursday I felt awful. There was no... You know, somebody, I was talking to some people and they were like, why didn't you tell us? We could have set up the booth for you. And I'm like, God, the way I broke down Fort Worth and the way the back of my truck is, we had 50-mile-per-hour winds coming around the corners. I just threw all the shit in the back of the truck. I don't know where anything is.
Yeah.
There comes a time when there's only you feel like only you can do the booth.
It's true, though. It really is true. I mean, for us anyway.
And
barely I can do it sometimes.
Right. And it's like, well, I put the D-rings for my craft hut inside the thing with the pro panel bits. And then, there's just a bunch of shit. It's like putting together Legos without a map or an instructional.
Yeah. So did you go down hard? Did you get pretty sick from it?
Yeah, for like 2 or 3 days. I had fever of about 103. And the scary thing about that whole thing, Doug, is that typically if you get sick, and then you're done, you get very quickly as sick as you're actually going to get. With this, I was like, well, I feel I don't feel like eating my burger, And then from that, and then you go into the hotel room, you're like, I feel pretty bad. And then you wake up and it's like fever. And then it's
it kind of sneaks up.
I can't actually breathe super awesome. the next day.
But it starts to dawn on you, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, is this going to keep getting worse? By day three, I guess, my fever broke and overnight and I'm laying in bed. It's one of those, wake up and you're drenched and the bed sheets are drenched and you're just like, that's gross. But anyway, it was over as quickly as it started.
Well, I did see what you posted on social, just being so grateful that you had the booster and, the vaccines. And it's like, it had an end. It was able to stop at a certain point, turn around, and get you out of the hole. So
exactly,
I'm glad that exists. I'm glad we were able to get on with our lives, and we're all going to get it at some point, and just hopefully just get over it quick. You know,
I mean, that's the thing. It's a realization to me now. I mean, like, you definitely are going to get it, and we're going to get it one of these art shows. So here's my advice for you. Okay. I've never been so happy to have opened up my suitcase and realized I packed my sweatpants. I was like, oh, my sweatpants. I'm sick. Hotel room. So pack your sweatpants.
I thought you were going to say your COVID
get
test.
Get yourself a COVID test to carry with you. And
a pair of sweatpants.
Brace yourself, Molly. It's coming.
Oh, man. Yeah, I saw the hackers had written that very same advice, and I hadn't thought about it. I got the free COVID test from the government that they said we could get them, and they're sitting in the cupboard downstairs, but they won't do me any good if I'm on the road and I start happening what happened to you. So
yeah, throw it in your toolbox.
Toolbox. Yeah. Bathroom bag, something.
Yeah, whatever. You know? I've got weird shit in my toolbox, Nick.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that'll be on the next episode of the Independent Artist Podcast. What's in your toolbox?
I've got a sack of chia seeds when I get dehydrated.
Nun tabs.
I actually have both.
Do you? Awesome. Yeah. Well, we did get our second booster right as soon as we could, you know, back before Fort Worth. And I was sitting at Fort Worth and I'm sitting at Jazz Fest where it's just like people shoulder to shoulder thinking, there's somebody in this crowd with COVID going to breathe on me. I'm sure. I'm glad I got the second booster. So anyway, it's out there. It's out there.
Well, I'm Typhoid Willie. I spread it coast to coast. I was positive. And I was looking it up and I'm like, okay, if you're feeling bad, you've been positive for 2 days ahead of that.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm like, so sold out concert at Red Rocks for Jason Isbell. Okay. Denver Airport. Got it.
Check.
Okay. Check. Atlanta Airport. Check.
Check.
The bar at Applebee's talking Atlanta Braves baseball to a couple of hillbillies. Check. Sorry, hillbillies. Hope you're vaxxed. So, sorry, everyone. If you see a spike from coast to coast, that's your boy.
But any one of those spots is where you got it. I mean, quite frankly. So,
right.
It's how do you know? That's that. Yep. That's that topic. So that happened.
Yay.
So no show for you. So you are getting ready for another one here.
Yeah, no show for me. I do have to give a quick shout out to the good people at Artisphere. They were incredibly understanding and quick to refund my booth.
Really?
Super bummed. Yeah.
Canceling just like right up to the end like that, they were able to do that. That's really great.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think with that show and the short wait list, hopefully they were able to fill that booth. I had like, honestly, the plum spot. You know, you go in to check in, you take a right. I'm the first booth on the left. I had a big double booth. I was so excited for the show, but instead I just hemorrhaged money and stayed in a hotel for an entire, week, 10 days. Jeez. Super sucked.
Oh,
okay. Well, I'm done. No more bitching.
No more COVID talk. Yeah. Well, you're complaining done. I have a little complaining to do. I've told enough stories on the pod about studio troubles I have. Well, this one takes the cake. So every few weeks we have to throw our raw materials into a 2,300 degree Fahrenheit furnace to melt our raw materials to get a pot of glass with 300 pounds of glass, which can usually get us through about 8 to 10 solid days of blowing glass. Anyway, I've been doing this for 30 years and the scoop that I throw the glass in slipped out of my hand into the pot and that thing melted right to the bottom.
Wow. Do you have a good divorce attorney?
Oh, man. I couldn't even speak. I came inside. She's like, what? What? She's trying to, you know, determine from my like complete and utter shock. She's like, did the furnace crash? I'm like, I'm just shaking my head. No. She's going through the laundry list of things that could go wrong.
Come on, tell her, Doug. Come on.
And then she says, did you throw the scoop in the pot? And then I'm just like up and down with the head. Yes, I did. And she's like, oh, shit. And it's not just like, okay, to a non-glass blower, it's like, what's the big deal? So you throw the scoop in. It ruins everything.
That's kind of like, well, you still have all of your paint, but we squeezed them all into one bucket.
You got it.
Yeah.
It's exactly right. And then not only, it's not like you can just throw that bucket out and buy all new paint. you now have to buy all new paper, all new brushes, all new, because the furnace now was potentially shit.
Yeah.
Which would have meant that we'd have to shut it down. We've got all these orders to make. We just had, we took all these orders. We've got all these shows lined up for the summer. I've got this surgery going. And I'm thinking, I have to shut the furnace off, do an entire rebuild of the furnace to fix this problem before we can even start making any more glass, which would be months. Anyway, long story short.
Is that months?
Yeah, because we would have to shut it down, which would take a week. We have to order the parts, which everything is completely back ordered. We get the parts. We have to tear the whole, the furnace has, is 15 years old. So when we rebuild it, it has to be completely rebuilt.
All so you have castings. To rebuild the furnace now?
If we would have had to shut it down, yes. But it didn't end up being as bad as it could have been.
Oh, so drama queen.
thank you. Yes. Welcome to the podcast, everyone.
So you're just speculating. So what did you actually have to do?
So what I ended up having to do is I spent a couple of hours on the phone after the thing is just like the Titanic and they're melting to the bottom of our pot, getting expert opinions from other glass blowers. Thank you, Mike Hayes, for your bit of wisdom, by the way. Basically, the consensus was get all that glass out of there and hopefully save your pot. So I'm going in there with garden shovels with wooden handles wrapped in tin foil, trying to scoop all the glass out as fast as I can. And it was almost like this aluminum scoop was like somebody broke open a thermometer. And every time I'd get some of the metal, it would all just congeal and slide off the end of the shovel. So I had to keep gathering and gathering and gathering for hours. I had to get every ounce of glass out of that pot and scrape out any of the molten metal too. So after we did that, I still thought I was going to have to replace the pot, the crucible that holds the glass. So, but I said, before I do that, I'm going to just give it one more shot. I'm going to fill it up with glass, which is possibly wasting 300 more pounds of glass to see what the problem was. And some more metal floated to the top, scooped that out. We were still able to make glass last week. So we're not out of the woods yet.
All right.
But it's better than it was looking about a week and a half ago.
So is this, it's a new technique with the Sigurd glass and shovel. Well, you know, you get a little scoop in yours.
You get a little bit of aluminum added to yours. It's an extra little Cracker Jack treat at the bottom of your glass piece.
Delicious. Is it toxic too when that thing goes in?
Totally toxic. We're lucky we didn't. I mean, inhaling aluminum fumes is not good for you.
No, not at all.
So that was my exciting drama week, and then getting off to the show. So, but that went fine. We were able to get some work made and get off to the show. Yeah, so that went off without a hitch. But that was a tough situation to recover from.
Like, I feel like I just saw you like 10 days ago, but you've already crammed in like 3 shows, and you ruined your furnace and all this other stuff. So you also went back to Jazz Fest, huh?
Jazz Fest was good. It was a little bit of a head trip for us because
how so?
Well, we're not the stars of the show. I mean, I've never done a show like that where there's 250,000 people walking around. Well, we're used to doing an art show where we're the artists. I mean, we're the reason people are coming, and they'll have a band on the side, but the bands are why people are there.
That makes sense. You know, I have done that show a number of times with my wife, like we've talked about, but it's almost like you have to wait for somebody to not be into Lionel Richie in order to make a sale. So, I've always found it to be a good show. But yeah, you are definitely secondary.
Yeah. So it started to feel like we weren't having that same kind of enthusiasm and like it might not really happen. Like we're glad we're here and we're glad we get to experience this. But I don't know if we're going to come out of this with the kind of sales we want. But then we sold a couple of pieces that were like at the top of our
top of the food chain.
Top of the food chain.
Yeah.
It's one of our big pieces. We're driving it out to New York to this lady. It's for her personally, but she also owns business with 5 or 6 locations. A wonderful person. She could turn into being a really great collector for us.
That's what I've found with some of those shows, like the big fish kind of shows. If it depends. Somebody was asking about, I'm trying to remember, like Crested Butte. And what I've heard about Crested Butte is something along the lines where it's like, well, not a huge turnout, but deep pockets that among the people that do. Mm. So if your business model is volume of people, maybe not the show for you as far as Crested Butte, whereas opposed to Jazz Fest, it's a mountain of people, but they're not all coming to see you.
Yeah.
You almost have to wait until Van Morrison sucks and then you can
have to the in-between point or something.
Right.
So, hey, what do you got coming up here? You said you're heading out to Baltimore?
I'm going to go be an artist assistant, or like Sharon Spiller always says, and I hate this, but she always calls it the booth bitch. But I'm going to go
totally
be an assistant.
The booth bitch.
You know what? I love selling jewels. There's nothing like selling somebody else's artwork to me. I love doing it. So yeah, I'm going to go to Baltimore, eat some crab cakes, sell some jewels, flirt with the ladies and make them feel good about all the pretty jewels that they have on. Then I'm going up to Minnesota. I'm coming back to your neck of the woods.
Oh, cool.
And so I'll actually drive past, see my folks in Richmond and then Old Town. Got that Chicago show.
I'll be in Old Town, too.
Right on. Turn the tables. You'll be the one on the scooter this time.
I'll be scooting around those wobbly streets in Old Town.
Hey, did you get that surgery scheduled, or do you want to talk about that? When's that coming up?
The surgery is, I don't know. It's at the end of every breakdown. You know, Renee and I look at each other, and we're like, maybe I'm not going to make it to September. Maybe it's going to end up happening sooner. But it's like today, I'm feeling like, to use an expression that you like to use, I feel like chewed food. I really have that Monday morning hangover where I'm like good for nothing right now. But I'm really trying to take this whole year one show at a time, one step at a time, and not try and lump it all into one big basket. So
yeah, do you feel like the universe is talking to you with the personally, like inside your brain was like, my feet are killing me, throw the scoop in and wreck this goddamn furnace?
It felt like it kind of felt like I was like somehow subconsciously doing a little sabotage so I could shut the operation down, but anyway. So
all right, one step at a time. You know, I had a great talk with Annie coming up, and I'm looking forward for you hearing that for the first time.
Me too.
She's super open. She's just wide open and tells absolutely everything. It's just a really cool talk. So it's about time we got some fiber into the podcast. Apologies to the rest of the fiber artists out there that we have not had one of your own on the pod yet. Yeah, exactly. So,
well, I'm looking forward to hearing it. So let's turn on the interview here with Annie Bassoni from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
This episode of the Independent Artist Podcast is brought to you by Zap, the digital application service where artists and art festivals connect.
Well, sometimes I'm in a real hurry, and I just love that I have things that are saved in Zap to streamline my process.
Saving shows as favorites is my personal way of using Zap. That's my favorite. I know a lot of people use the calendar, they use the events, but for me, if I'm saving the favorites of anything I've ever looked at or thought about doing, then I can check out those deadlines on a regular basis.
But then there's other times when I have a little more time on my hands and I'm looking into other shows. All the information is right there in the prospectus with links to the website. I can see who the artists are that have participated in the past.
That's a great idea, Douglas, because one of the ways that I was finding shows at the very beginning was to go online and see who I felt my work looked good with.
It's just great that all that information is organized and easy to look over when planning our next show season.
Okay, your t-shirt's awesome.
Thanks. It's Nick Cave. My daughters call this. It's just like, that penis man that you, because his penis is hanging out. So
I love it.
So we're big Nick Cave fans.
Oh, I am such a huge fan.
Oh, me too. So, hey, do me a favor real quick and pronounce your last name for everybody, because I butchered it, I believe. Douglas just told me.
I know, it's tricky. It's Bassoni.
Yeah.
So it's Italian, but it's like, it's the E on the end is a long E, which, it's like some people are automatically know that. And then others, it's just Bassone,
right,
which isn't bad, but my name is so short anyways. And so I'm just like, I need all the vowels and all the pronunciation.
You do. Well, just to make you feel better, I'll go with a hard G at the end of my name. Armstrong. Have you noticed that it's like Italians are like the last bastion of okay racism? Have you noticed?
I think you might be onto something. It's true.
Annie Bassoni, and they're like, ah ha ha, we can all chuckle about that. It's like that's still racist.
I know. Sometimes I get the question of like, oh, is that, are you French? And I'm like, oh, are you Canadian? Love those too.
You're like, oh, are you a moron? Because that's not how that goes. So, man, I have been wanting to get you on this show for a long time. A, because I love you and you're amazing. And B, because we haven't had any fiber yet. We're going to get run out of this business here if we don't have some. It's like a major part of our shows.
Yeah. And for a second, I thought you said fire. I'm like, I'll bring all the fire.
Bring the fire. So, yeah, I mean, it's you do bring the fire and you bring a positive, you know, we had Lynn Whipple on last week and it's like the positive energy segment of the podcast, I guess, here. And so I've always felt that way about you. Who's your crew as far as your art show crew? We all have our crews. Like, who do you hang with?
You.
Yeah, right, me. Yeah, well, this does not make my point, but yeah.
A little special somebody named Matthew Nasker and all of his people. Yeah, I know a lot. Like, I feel like I can just, like, jump in and out of a lot. Like, I don't have one solid kind of, like, crew that I can only feel like I get. Yeah.
I guess what I was getting at is like, I was, you know, I kind of feel like there's this crew out on the art show world, like you're Rob and Leslie and Anthony Hansen and you. Always. And it's kind of like you get around these folks and it's just like this positive energy kind of feel about you guys. Yeah. And it's, it feels good to talk to you. So it's,
I feel like we find each other.
We do.
It's amazing how easy that is. And I find that that's been as an adult and not in like an environment where you're kind of put in like a school environment or a social something, whatever that is. But as now an adult and not having those easily accessible kinds of places.
Right.
I feel like doing like finding family with other, because I'm a mom. So finding other like-minded families and my son's friends and all of that. And then, my art show family, it's like, it feels so good.
It does. And we'll get into like juggling the family life. And I want to talk to you about that because you and I have pretty similar experiences with that, with being in fairly new relationships that you're passionate about, the fact of juggling family life and then art life. And then basically being in a new kind of love life, too, you've got a new-ish relationship that you're passionate about. And it's how do you do it?
I have to say, just like a side note of like how much support it takes to make this all work. And my son, Xander, his dad and I are no longer obviously together, but we have such a great co-parenting relationship. We've always had a great relationship that way, like how we support each other.
That's amazing.
So when I feel so fortunate because it could so not be that. And when I'm on the road, like Xander is with him. And when I'm home, depending on how long that is, like Xander's with me. And so we just communicate our schedules with each other so that I can easily like not be here. So if I didn't have that, like I have no family close by or anything. So it's like I would not be able to be doing art festivals if
that's huge. Yeah. I mean, that's what I juggle with too, because everybody, I mean, I don't know. My ex is an art show artist. So juggling my schedule with hers, I'm like, you know, she and I are sitting there like I feel like we root for each other as far as our successes go and what shows, but I'm sure there's an element of both of us that's like, God, I hope she doesn't get Cherry Creek because I really want to go to Cherry Creek. Somebody's got to watch the kids. But, you know, we're fortunate enough to have her folks and they are watching the kids and they're getting a little bit older too, but juggling those schedules is, I don't know. It's insane. And my wife, Susan, is not a fan of the schedule. She hates. Aww. It's like, okay. She's like, why are you pouring me a whiskey? I'm like, we got to talk about the schedule. It's coming. It's coming down. And it's just a fucking nightmare. I mean, it really is just sitting there like, okay. Yeah. And another reason I wanted to talk here's it, it's I'm I'm using you. It's like Annie Besoni in therapy session for Will. Like, that's
well, like, go there.
All right.
I'm ready.
So like another part of the juggling is being in a relationship and having your kids, where it's like, I have a tendency when I don't have the kids, that's my production mode. And when I'm on and I have the kids and we split them 50-50, and when it's my turn with my girls, then I'm dad, and I'm an artist when they're at school, but I'm, you know, full dad mode. And so it's like, okay, here's dad mode. I'm not really making much artwork. I'm not doing much other stuff. But then when they leave, then I've got to be, okay, now I'm full artist mode. But then you got to be, all right, now I'm full partner mode too. And I have a tendency to drop the ball on being a decent husband when I do have the kids, or when I'm, you know, in art mode. So you got to make sure that all of that stuff stays up in the air and everything gets its proper attention, or you're not, I don't know. How do you do it?
I don't do it well, I don't think. And okay. I feel, I mean, I don't know. I think I'm also really hard on myself, and there is the whole like baggage that carries,
right?
Like as a mom, right? Like we have this idea of like what moms are supposed to be capable and all the things that, you know, whatever. So my schedule right now, up until actually, which is why we can finally have this lovely conversation, is that I am not home for 10 days running off on the road for and then being gone for a week and then home for 10 days.
Yeah.
So what it's been like for me from the start of this year, I'll just speak to, is that the minute I get home, I get Xander, and I have like 10 days to make as much work as I possibly can. And each piece I make is like about 16 to 20 hours. So I don't even know how I don't even understand how this all works out. And then it's full, like I just am working all the time. And so I don't take off like I'm the mom now, and I'm juggling making meals. I have a 14-year-old son who seems like he's always hungry.
Oh my God.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Like I talk about it so much, like, oh, Xander's hungry. By the time I clean up the kitchen, and we eat totally different. Like he's all meat and I'm all not. And so it's like I'm making all the meals for, like, I'm making six meals or five meals a day or more, whatever. It's just like bonkers. So I don't do the balance well, and I get stressed out, and I don't always handle it. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of guilt. I feel like I carry around a lot of guilt, a lot of like looking back, like, oh my gosh, I think it goes to the point of like, I've always been a lover of kids, but I never actually intended to have any of my own.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to be the best auntie or the best, like, you know, friend of the, you know, like girlfriends, whatever,
right,
who have kids. And just like, I wanted all in on that. I was like, so into caring for my two younger sisters, because there's six of us total in my family.
Wow.
So I've always been like, it's never been like I'm an anti-kid. I just know like how much I need for myself as an artist. Like I could never quite square how I could make all that work. And I continually keep proving that to myself, even though I keep running up that mountain. I still am just like, but I can't do it all well or whatever.
But you are doing it. You're doing it. You're trying to stay focused, but it's like, I do the exact same thing to myself, where I feel like if I'm giving 60% to my kids and 30% to my wife, and that leaves 10% for my art, then I'm like, oh, I'm a shitty artist. It's like, I'm only giving 10% to my art, and I'm only giving 30% of myself to my wife, and I'm only giving 60 to my kids, and I'm only doing this, and or, you know, my kids suffer, and it's like, oh my God, I have to finish this painting this afternoon. And they've been in their room on their screens. Now I get the guilt, but it's like, you have to give yourself a break. We're doing the best we can.
It's true. And I mean, to speak to like the newish, really, it's funny because it's like getting together during like pretty much just the beginning of the pandemic. So we're all pretty isolated for a while and not being out on the road with each other. But
yeah. Did you get weird?
No, it was actually
I got
it was
weird.
Kind of a dreamy. It was a dreamy time, at least to like not be distracted by shows and needing to work all the time. And I had no like inspiration, and I survived basically on making like almost 2,000 masks.
Oh my god!
Because nobody was wearing anything but like, you know, whatever yoga pants and stuff. So I'm glad I could go there, but. Right now,
I'm not going to pan down with this camera. You're not gonna.
I was just busy saving lives. You know, no big deal.
Right. That's amazing. How many masks? 2,000 masks?
At least. I think I was keeping count, and I think that I lost count about 1,800.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, I was so done with it. But I had all the materials. Sourcing elastic got really challenging. That was the biggest, but the prototypes and like I had these high quality like inserts, so they were like 95% effective. Like I felt like I just went full on science and like made a whole bunch, tried different ones, and Matthew supplied the titanium wire for the nose so they wouldn't get rusty, and they were lightweight. Like it was like good group effort with like sourcing the right kinds of things.
But, yeah, that's very cool.
All the fabric I had and the skills.
Yeah, you got the skills. Hey, let's talk about how you got them skills. Let's rewind the clock and tell the Annie Bassoni story.
Yeah, that's kind of a fun story. And I feel like as I've gotten a little bit older and more introspective about stuff is like, I feel bad that my paternal grandmother hasn't seen where I've come with what she's taught me. So when I was 8 years old is when, like I'm sure like a lot of us listen to TED Talks or, you know, at least know what that is. And there's so much science out there that talks about that recall that happens in our brains where we can look back to whatever we learned at around that age. And we can already have this like foundation to work from. So it's like when people learn an instrument or a language, that's why all those things are so important at that mm-hmm. age too. So for me, I didn't have all of that except I had sewing. So every weekend, my grandma, I was the only one who like took to it.
Wow. So like tried. What age are we talking about?
I was 8 when we started.
Okay.
And she never gave me like any immediate satisfaction. And at that time, like what I really wanted was like some amazing jams, which is funny because I've never like really been a short wearer.
Yeah.
But I was like, I had in my mind like the super 80s print. Like I just knew like the look I was going for.
You were
going
to be so cool.
I was, and I had to wait so long. So she would take me to the fabric store. She would like show me how to read a bolt, what the content was. I had to do all the laundry for it. I had to wash it. And she like made me iron it all and like cut out the pattern. Like I had so much like ground level foundation skills that I kept building on. So all through high school and college, I've always made my own clothes.
Like that's it was always so cool. Something I
just did. Yeah.
She's got a great personality and she makes her own clothes.
I just make my own clothes. Yeah.
Douglas, I think we've got a title. So you're 8 years old. Did she watch you guys? Like, did she watch the kids after school? You were the youngest of 6. So let's get into that. You were the only one that took to sewing.
Middle. Okay. I'm like the third oldest.
Okay. So gotcha.
And I have one brother and they're all girls otherwise.
You were the Jan.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyways, and then my two youngest, my sister, and then I have an Irish twin. Because I'm also like, I'm half Irish. Mm-hmm. So my sister is like 11 months younger than me. So I wasn't even the baby. I didn't get nursed for very long. Like it was just like, bam. Like there was already a new baby in the house. I don't even know like how my mom's body was able to even make another baby. But I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. So wait, so how far apart were you guys?
She's 11 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Straight Irish twins. Wow.
I know.
Is that racist?
I don't know.
It's okay. Okay, so we've determined it's okay to be racist against Italians and Irish now? Is that where we're good? Okay. We're breaking new ground.
Maybe it's Catholicism. Maybe that's the problem. I mean, that's kind of the problem.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Or, you know, wherever you stand the benefit, if that's what you like. right?
Yeah, but definitely, like, yeah, those kinds
okay,
of
so you barely even got, you know, nurse before your sister comes along. Then you're the next baby. You're expected to babysit her. You know, learn to walk, yeah. Annie. It's time to get up and get to work.
I know. I was always really independent. One of my favorite episodes, my mom was a good storyteller too. Like, she'd always tell stories, like late at night, sitting around and be like, oh, tell me a story. Once in a while, she would say the story of, like, I think I was young and it was like one of those parades, like 4th of July parades, but not a big one, not like the big downtown kind of style. Sure. It's more like a small town one. And I just left my whole family. I think I was like 4 or 5 and I just got right into the parade and I just kept going. She's like, and you never looked back.
And oh my gosh.
Like, it's like the story of my life. Like, see ya.
That's incredible.
It took me a long while to join the circus.
But, yeah. Well, you're in the circus now, lady. You're in the circus now. You've got your monkeys and you're
so long.
Oh my God. Throwing some peanuts. All right. So you're the middle child.
Yes.
When are you learning sewing with your grandmother? Is this after school or is this on weekends?
Only on weekends. Yeah.
Only on weekends.
We didn't live close by. So it was like an arranged kind of like had to schedule rides and stuff. But
gotcha.
Yeah, so I would hang out with her all day. And the other thing about her is like she had such, and I didn't have the words for it then, and it kind of took me a while to come to it, but she was so entrepreneurial and she lived through the Depression.
Oh, wow.
She used to set like women's hair for like side. She had all these side hustles and she did ceramics and would sell, like she would like do the sort of tchotchke molds and sell with plants at the, you know, when hospitals had like their whole gift shops.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like hospitals now don't have that, but there was such a culture of like the hospital gift shop. And that's where you brought your sympathy flowers or your whatever to the rooms. You know, I don't know. It just feels like that was different. I remember helping her with that and she'd tell me what to glaze and like she had a kiln in her basement.
Wow.
And she was always just making stuff.
Yeah.
In the garden. I mean, in so many ways, like the things that she's into is like the things that I'm into. So
yeah.
It's like, oh, I wish that she could like, oh my gosh, I like, look at me now. Like I'm doing this thing.
Right.
I don't know. It's pretty great.
That is really great. That's incredible. And you, you learn how to sew and you learn how to make your own clothes. And did you go to school for that too? Or did you just take on your own designs?
Funny is like in Milwaukee, which is where I live, just let that out there. But
yeah.
There's a Mount Mary College is here. And I actually went there for 2 years and Donna Karen, I think, went there for a little bit. She endows the program. So it has like a really great fashion design, fashion merchandising program. But that is not why I went there. I mean, I'm not a fashion person. Like that word is like, it's getting easier for me to say, but I don't come from making, like I call myself a garment builder. Like I don't think of myself in that way. Like that's just another topic that
Do you think that that's the same way that a lot of artists like I have a hard time like, well, I'm an artist. I mean, that is what I do for a living. I am an artist. I'm a painter. Used to be a drawer, but that was awkward to say with a Southern accent. So I went into painting mixed media. But, you know, it's like, is that an insecurity on your part or do you just like the utilitarian title of being a builder?
I feel like the builder part makes sense as to like actually the making process for me. Like that feels more true. I feel like there's a part that is just like the basket of fashion that is very like self-centered or like very much like that's not even the right word. I think I just don't identify with it. And I feel like fashion is and can be like activism. Like there's a whole, I mean, I know that like it exists in this other place that's not just like what's the latest trends. I've just never been a trend person. Like that's just not, I never wanted to look like anyone else. Like
sure.
I always wanted to go the other way. Peer pressure was not a problem for me. Like I didn't suffer from like, you know, crippling, like, oh my gosh, I don't fit in. Thankfully, like I didn't have that and that's real and horrible for people. But
yeah.
I didn't have that. But when I went to Mount Mary, it's funny, like I just wanted to get out of the house at that point.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's a huge part of school sometimes. Just it's like a little jump, you know, and whether you go to learn your trade or whether you go to learn to have sex and drink beer, it's, you know, it kind of up to you. I mean, that's that. But it is good to get out of the house. I mean, both of those those things have, I guess they have a point.
My house, my home life was pretty bad at that point. Mount Mary is an all girls school.
Okay.
And so at the time when I was there, and the reason why I went there is I love school. So let's just start with that. Like, I was totally into school and all of it. Like, I definitely wanted higher education. I just didn't, I just knew my immediate need was like, I need to get out of this toxic environment.
So I mean, what was, I mean, I don't know if you want to get into that or not, but what was going on with you in your home life at that point?
My parents finally separated, thankfully.
Thank God. Divorce is a wonderful thing.
My dad's a horrible human and was my whole life. We never got along. So it just took my mom so long to finally get there. And he's still alive. I don't know where he is. Okay. My mom passed away like March 1st of 2020. So world. That was hard. Oh my gosh. Because we finally like fell back in love with each other real recent in like the last couple of years. Yeah. So that, I'm glad for that. But yeah, you and I, you were there the night that I got that phone call.
Right down in Gasparilla. That was.
I had to turn around. Yeah, I didn't do it. So this, the last year, not 2021 was the first time I got to fulfill that like show. Right? Was that last year? I get confused on dates. Was that this year?
Whatever. Right. So you actually got to go to that show. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was like kind of, I felt really emotional about that. But anyway.
So we had just come down there and set up the show in Gasparilla. And I feel like we'd set it up and then we met and had a bite to eat. And I met you and Matthew. And then did you go and pack it all up and turn tail?
Yeah, it was actually before we actually met. It was like we were walking to you at the restaurant and my brother called and was like, you know, it's now like this, mom's not getting better. And he's like, it's not long. And so he's like, if you want to come. And thankfully, Matthew just like contacted the show directors and did all the things. And we loaded out super early in the morning on Saturday with the help of like anyone else that was around, which was awesome. That was like a dream state. I don't even I don't remember any of that. And then I drove, and Matthew met me halfway. I dropped him off at the airport in Nashville and I got about 5 hours from home because it was about 18-hour drive. And my brother called and said she had passed. I was so close. And He just constantly keeps saying, like, just count your blessings on this one. Go with your last time you saw her, which was like Xander and I hanging out with her, having dinner before I left. And she was in such a great place. You know, it was awesome. And so he was like, I wish that I didn't have to see what I saw, like her like decline so rapidly. So,
Yeah, that's so hard. I'm sorry to make you relive that. It's just
It's getting easier. I can actually talk about it now in a way that is like there's a sweetness there and like not a lot of tears, you know, like it's okay. And I, you know, with how it's all now looking back at the last like 2 years, I mean, I don't know what kind of life it could have been. Like she would have been in isolation because she would have been seriously like so prone to getting COVID, you know, it's just like, you didn't have to have all of that.
She missed all of that.
And we didn't have to, and you didn't have to be so alone because she would have been alone.
Yeah. So when you got back together with your mom, was there, you had some kind of resentment there as far as like her, you know, letting you deal with all of that shit for so long?
Yeah. And she had remarried somebody who I just did not. It was bristly. And so everything that was like super heightened about how different her and I were, like on every level of all the fundamental like values that I stand for, she was opposite. So you could fill in the blank all about that. Like she was pro-life, a Trumper, like all this all the stuff that goes along with that and righteous about it. So it was really challenging. Oof. And she lived about an hour away, so it was just far enough that I didn't see her often, which was great. But she also never had a relationship with my son, which is always a sadness. And yet there are times where I was like, I just wanted to like send her like this card, like, don't take this the wrong way, but I just never want to see you again. And as a mom, I'm like, how devastating that would be, no matter what, where we were in our lives. If Xander wrote me that card, yeah. I just would have been like, and I never did. And we came through it, but it honestly took me, and it felt like it was just like one day her husband passed away, and it was just like this day I just decided, like, I'm just going to lead with love. This is so much to carry around, all this like, oh,
contempt and resentment.
I hate. And like, I just like to keep that constant like fire of hate or whatever. And like, I was just like, no longer are you going to have this power over me with that. Like, I'm just going to love you no matter what. And I don't know how I got there, but I did. And she followed suit. Just like, we never talked ever again for the last 2 years about politics, about Trump, about anything. It just was all like amazing. It was beautiful, actually. Yeah. It was great. And so she never acknowledged it. I never acknowledged it. Something the windows opened up, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to let in all the light, and I don't know how long I have with you. And I just, thank God, like I didn't, like we didn't, yeah. like she didn't pass away in that place where like I was all like, you're horrible, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah. She didn't pass away in hate, or she passed away while you were hating hate. You know, get rid of the hate.
And I think that she felt really good too. Like, she was in a place where she was like looking forward to the future, and she was going to live with my brother, and he was super happy and excited about that. And
that's amazing.
Like, yeah, yeah, it was
at least on an upward trend. It's loving people that, I mean, it used to be that you could have different political beliefs and still get along. My parents are both Republicans. They are, luckily for me, they're anti-Trumpers. They're a couple of the, you know, anyone but Trump, hate what it has done to the party kind of folks. But they at least raised me to be understanding and able to talk to anybody that has different beliefs. I love some Republican people. I mean, I've got nieces and nephews that are super conservative that, you know, I adore them and their family. And we talk about Texas singer-songwriters and not politics ever at all. It's like,
good.
You know, I might get my little jabs in. It's like, you know,
and they probably do too, maybe.
Yeah, they're, you know, I tend to be maybe a little more yes. Confident in my my mouth, my gab, my gift of gab. Yeah, so
right.
You know, it is what it is, but it's tough. My, you know, talking about like when the racist statues came down in Richmond, Virginia, which had been my hometown for 99% of my life up until we moved 2 years ago, and seeing those Confederate statues come down and learning what they meant. While my parents are kind of like, you know, you took down our beautiful Monument Avenue, and they were upset about it until they even came around. So I don't know. It's interesting to live with that kind of people.
It is.
Yeah. And see them grow, see them change a little bit.
There's so much possibility in that. But I just wanted to say one thing about my first 2 years of college part is I actually went to school. I went to college with my mom and my oldest sister. There's three of us. And I think that's why I pretty much got a free ride, because they're like, well, buy two, get one free.
That's amazing.
So I remember passing. And at that time, my mom and I were in a good space because I was out of the house or whatever. Like, that was our
goal. So wait, all three of you went to school? Were you living in that town, and you stayed at home and went, or did you?
No, I lived in the dorms. My sister had her own place, and my mom was living in a apartment kind of situation by her sister.
Sounds like a movie.
It was really fun, and it was cool. They, like, everyone thought that they just called my mom, and like we were all smokers then, so they would bum cigarettes from her.
That's amazing.
She'd, you know, give me a 20 or something, pass her in the hallway.
Wow.
Yeah, we had a class. We had photography class together. She made amazing photography.
That's like, so cool. Like, did she ever show it?
Her dark room.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, my mom used to do art fairs. She was a painter. Yeah.
That's so, like, so you're a second generation art show? Is that how you learned how to do this?
No, well, actually, once I got done at that, like at Mount Marion, I realized where I wanted to be. I went to MIAD, which is the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design here.
Okay, yeah.
And so I went there for 4 years, and I had gotten done with so many prerequisites of, I focused a lot on philosophy while I was there, which I was really into, and some of like the other things that I would have needed to have done once I went to MIAD. And so I pretty much had like 4 years of studio.
That's amazing.
I graduated with painting degree and a double minor, and I was into it. Yeah.
A double minor in what?
I was
philosophy
a
and so, I'm sorry, say that again.
I said I was a drawer.
It's the worst word.
Drawing and printmaking.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. So that you already had the sewing skills, and then you went in with drawing and printmaking, and then you studied philosophy kind of just on the side for your own benefit.
Yeah.
Do you still read
abstract
it?
Abstract thinking. Not as much.
Okay.
Reading right now is tricky.
Yeah.
I would always be reading all kinds of stuff. And all those stacks of books I keep acquiring, and I'm having a hard time. Like,
I am too.
When I'm reading.
Especially with I go through these phases where I delete social media off of my phone, and then I'll kind of come back to it and then just spiral. Mm. And it really ruins reading for me. So. Okay, so you've got the painting and printmaking. You already have the skills for sewing. How old are we right now? Like 22, 23? Like typical kind of post college?
Yeah, probably 20.
Okay,
yeah.
Sweet. So you're about 20.
Yeah.
Do you? At what point do you like? At that point, do you work?
Well, this is what happened. Is my main focus, I had a really great professor who was a master encaustic.
Mm.
Like that was his main medium. And it was just one day, it was my junior year, and he was like, and he brought in like his boxes, like these amazing, just like wooden boxes. He's like, okay, guys. And he was like, you know, came of age in the 60s and stuff. He was in Vietnam. He was tortured in a lot of ways psychologically. And so he'd make these amazing like geisha paintings.
Yeah.
He's no longer living. He passed away. It's been over 5 years now. But so he just like brought all these like tuna fish cans filled with like all these colors of things. And he just set up. And slowly, like, all my classmates started wandering away. They're like, okay, Ron, you know. He's like,
okay.
Math scientist. Like, okay, like, what? And I just, like, the floodgates opened up, and I was his pupil. Like, he gave me all of his, like, special recipes. So I made all my own resins. I did, like, all the alchemy was, like, no pre-made stuff. I got so into it. And so encaustic was my thing.
Yeah.
I had jobs to pay the rent kind of stuff, like working in greenhouses. And I was like, you know, a barista,
all the stuff that you have to do. Well, you know.
Yeah. But in that time I had residencies and I was doing gallery shows.
Cool.
Like I basically sold all the work I ever made. I have one piece that I kept. Yeah. And so I was like on this whole trajectory. Like I was struggling with like how at that time, I mean, that's like been a while now, but like 15, 18 years ago, is how much as a independent artist, you didn't have agency. It was more of the curators, right?
Right.
Like they were the rock stars. They were the ones calling the shots and building or breaking careers, you know? Which takes me into why I love doing art festivals, because we are like our own independent artists doing the thing, right? Like
absolutely, yeah.
I think if anyone, and of course, like listening to, I haven't listened to Lynn's interview yet, so I hope to do that this week. But I've listened to all of them so far and love all of it. It's so great that this is happening and that you're like doing this.
Thanks. We just, you know, shining a light on all these people, all these weirdos. And then we're all, you know, it's like we all do the same thing, but we all completely do it differently. And it's so cool to see how we get here.
I love hearing it. It feels good. And if I'm in my studio and I'm having that, like, especially during the winter when no shows are happening, yeah, and then I just like listen back. I'm like, oh, it feels so good. My
family, thanks.
You know, we're all doing the things.
We're all jumping through the hoops. It's the hustle.
I just want to cheer everyone on and like, yeah, thank for their, like, you know, what they're bringing.
All right. So let me jump right back in, if that's cool with you, because you're learning in caustic and it's part of the hustle. And you're like, you're doing gallery stuff and you're doing some showings. You have this kind of mentor with the encaustic and you're showing your paintings, but how do you transition? Like at that point, are you still making your own clothes?
Yeah. And doing a lot, Lynn, doing some weird stuff. And like that, it was kind of like the rise of like the indie craft movement too. So I was doing all of my other like professional artist work, but then I also had friends that were like creating these like great artist run spaces. So kind of galleries, which I had some shows there too, but also like independent sellable, like just people making interesting, weird objects, whether it's zines, whether it's like deconstructed clothing, whether it's like little prints, like whatever, like, so those kinds of things started to pop up a lot around in the community that I was living in,
right?
And we're all supporting each other in that way.
And this is Milwaukee.
Yeah. And so then there's this really amazing place that no longer exists. So shout out to the Polish Falcon, which was like a meeting house and had this amazing bowling alley in the basement.
Wow.
And it was like one of those Polish, like, what is the word? Where it was like this activity center for like the Polish community.
Yeah.
So it was like where they would, it's kind like
a rec hall or a...
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was a part of the neighborhood I lived in, which is called River West. And so I was there with a bunch of girlfriends sitting around drinking beer. And I was like, guys, you ever get this like sort of weird cramp in your side, kind of like around your pelvis? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, it's probably time. I need to get an annual exam. I've been kind of putting it off. And I was in a relationship at that time. And so I was like, okay. So I made an appointment with Planned Parenthood, like right that week. And they're like, well, is there a chance that you're pregnant? And I was like, well, I have had unprotected sex.
Yeah, that's how it works, right?
They're like, well, yeah, everything that they tell you, it's true. So then she's like, well, let's just do a pregnancy test and we can go from there. And then it came back positive.
Oh my gosh.
I thought I was doing all the right things, but
well,
I messed that up a little bit.
I mean, did it right, clearly. I mean, if that's how it works.
The first and only time I ever got pregnant. And so I was faced with that decision and my whole life changed. Like literally that day, I had to quit drinking, quit smoking, and quit my art practice. Everything that I was doing in all the ways that I was making encaustic was super toxic.
Oh my God. Yeah.
As far as like, and I sought out all the lead paints. I sought out all the heating up of all the things. I mean, I took care.
Of course.
And I wasn't stupid about it, but not when you're pregnant. Like you can't be doing that business. So all of a sudden, like my whole world was upside down on so many. Yeah. So it was just like that. And so, yeah, I struggled. So that whole like little like indie craft movement kind of kept me making.
They kept you afloat and you were, you know, you had that in your blood to make.
I needed a creative outlet. That was the first time ever in my life that I wasn't doing something.
Right.
And so once I had my son, the whole world of kids' clothing was just so not on my radar until I actually had to purchase it. And I was like, why is kids' clothes? Like, why is it so gender specific and super like pink and blue and like army and tough and like princesses, whatever. So I started making Xander's clothes and I like had so much fun with it. And I was just like learning how to like take the things and skills that I had and like shrink it down.
Yeah.
And it was a good, another friend of mine, just like, just planted seeds. Like, how many people in our lives just like plant seeds for us, right? Like,
of course.
It just like kind of, and she was like, hey, let's do this farmer's market. She was doing herbs and like garden stuff. And she was like, and I was giving these, I mainly focused on kids' pants, like super colorful, gender neutral. You could wear a cloth diaper or not. They're easy to put on once they're learning like potty training stuff. So, yeah, I did this local farmer's market and like I would sell out and I would be like, okay, I got it. And I had this like tiny little space in the living room where I would sew and try to be, you know, up on like all my momming that I had to do.
Right. Oh my God.
Yeah. And I had this like, I had a yellow and red like circus looking tent and a Prius sticking out the back, like going to shows.
That's amazing.
And I would get farther and farther away. I'd go do Renegade in Chicago. I'd go to like,
yeah,
you know, Indiana.
It's a virus. That's like, yeah, the little art show thing, you know?
How far, like, can I go? And like Xander would come with and his dad would come, you know, it was like a group thing.
That's so cool.
I'd always bring toys and kids would come hang out at my booth. And yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I've talked to some other folks about like, whether or not they bring kids, whether or not they want to. I mean, my kids early on, I didn't feel like it was super easy at all. It just never really seemed to work out as far as bringing the whole family. Oh, yeah. But
yeah,
that's
and it only did because of what I was selling. It made sense early on.
Yeah, that I mean, that's all part of the picture.
Yeah. It was part of my brand.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's true, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. I wanted it to be fun. And, you know, it was really cool. And the thing is like, not until Xander was three, and I this is like a proud mama moment for me, is like, he had just started to get into Legos, which was such a fun, many years of Lego building stuff. But he was like, Mama, who makes Legos? Because at that point, everything that he had around him, like I made, his dad made, friends made, we bought locally, like not to get all weird, but like that was his reality.
Yeah.
And I was like, China.
Right. Mr. Lego.
I was like, okay, prepare yourself, of course. He's like, what's China?
wow. Yeah. That's incredible. That's really, really cool. Like, so, okay. I mean, that is part of your worldview, and that's part of, and that's an amazing worldview. Does he create too now, Xander?
Not so much. He's more of a gamer now with friends and stuff.
That makes sense.
But I feel like it's not gross yet. Hopefully it will never get gross. I feel like the way that he and his friends kind of have worked through, definitely because he was home for like 2 years home because of COVID. Like Milwaukee had, like the schools were closed for a long time.
New Mexico
and
too.
He's been really, yeah, okay. Oh yeah, it's brutal. I mean, it was hard, but I felt like because of his accessibility of being able to be with his friends, and I would hear him, you know, my studio is on the same floor as his, and like they're laughing and talking, like his mental health stayed solid. Like he has been, I feel like it was the social part for him that kept up. I didn't really care about schooling, honestly. Like,
yeah. Like, so we had kind of the opposite experience because we moved and they didn't know, you know, the girls didn't know anyone and they couldn't make any friends and we're trying to get out and you just can't, you don't know any, you know, and school is a screen. And so they definitely suffered, but they're finally kind of coming. My youngest, she could walk into a room and walk out with five friends. She's just super extrovert. Whereas Ada, the older, she's much more introverted, but she has found like the best group of friends. Like finally, like if you could concoct the best group of friends for a 13-year-old girl, you're like, well, she's very smart. She's very nerdy. She's very bookish. But they're all like, they're all pretty and social within their own. Can we cut pretty? Why the fuck did I say pretty? It doesn't matter. I mean, she is pretty, but that's not, you know, is that important? Why did I say, you know, that's like, that's, I just brought my toxic masculinity into the party. Come on in. She's pretty. But she's, you know, it's just like, she's got this crew of people that's like, you know, when they split up the rest of the class and they're like, you guys got to move apart. You're not getting anything done. Like, her table never really moves. She gets to sit there with her crew and just, you know.
Yay!
Yeah, so finally. But it's COVID just crushes all of that stuff. And it's been so goddamn hard.
It's been so hard on the kids, for sure. Yeah,
incredible. Ugh. So you are, I want to talk about your artwork, what you're making now, and kind of your design sense. And you don't like the word design. You want to be more of a builder. And I see that. But what I see...
Fashion is more the word.
Fashion. Design is okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But fashion.
Yeah, there's something with that word.
Okay. Because like part of what I wanted to talk to you about was about fashion. Because no. I do see... art.
It's like, it's built in. I got to just accept it. I got to just get over it. Or I have to have my own, like, I have to just have my, own reckoning with it or something.
Yeah. But I mean, okay. I wanted to talk to you because like, I do see you as a kind of top in the fiber field. You're out there, you're creating, you're making things that you're not seeing other people doing. There's an early, how do I say this without being a dick? I'm just going to say it because that's who I am. Okay. There's this certain kind of style that you see in clothing that it fits a lot more people. How about that? Oof. How nice. You can throw.
Exactly what you're talking about. And the pieces that I make they're all one of a kind. I mean, right. I really back myself up against wall. So I make one of a kind pieces. I do make for sizes, and like extra small to extra large is my range. And I also make them semi-fitted.
Yeah.
So it's really limited. Like, yeah, I'm not.
It doesn't fit everybody. It's hard.
No. And I'm doing okay. Like I'm surviving and I'm living off of what this is working. So I just keep going. Cause it's really like what I want to be doing is I really want to keep on this path and like keep building my designs. I keep wanting to make a men's line, but I haven't been able to get that quite done yet. But, I do understand, the draw to make things that are more one size fits most kind of thing.
You're not making tunic kind of pieces. It's not loose. It's fitted. They're like,
yeah.
And you're creating things that are, like take my wife's work, her jewelry. She's not doing mass volumes of sales, but she's creating very personal things for people that become part of their own signature style. And I feel like that is a similar direction that you maybe live in.
I think that you said that really well. And I feel like just this year, I finally, with the help of Matthew, finally have a label in my work that puts my name on it.
That's so cool.
I understand that that's important for people to have that authenticity thing, but it was never about me. Like I want to create something that makes you feel good and strong and powerful. And I want you to own that. It doesn't need to have my name on it, per se. And
okay.
So I've really battled with like doing that for so long. I was like, this just doesn't feel like the right approach. But I mean, now I'm like, it's nice. I do have a label in my work now, but
so like a physical label, is that what you're saying? Like a physical, like a, this is, did you come up with a business name or is it just your name or?
Well, it's actually the business that I had when I was doing the kids' clothes, the Lalo workshop that was my son's first color word. It's how he pronounced yellow. So that's where the name comes from because kids have a hard like Y sound.
Yeah.
And so it had to be personal. Right. And so it's Lalo workshop. And I kept it through the whole, like I had a transitional period where I realized that I really wanted to like keep designing. And I reached a point of Xander's age and like, I was maxed out on like what I could do with kids stuff. I was just like, I want to go next level. And so I started that. And so there was this little like time period, maybe not quite a year, where I had both things for women and the kids stuff. And then I got rid of the kids' stuff. And it's funny, the first time, I was trying to remember this not too long ago, the first time that I did a show that was just the kids, that, or like a bigger art festival, because I was trying to remember, it was such a natural, all this was such a natural progression that I just kept doing the next thing, was that a friend of mine had told me about the ACC St. Paul show.
Yeah.
And that he was going to do it. And that was back when they had that hip-hop, whatever.
The hip-hop, like, yeah. Kind of, it was their emerging artist program.
Yeah. And so he was like, oh, maybe you might want to do that. That would be cool. We can do it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he was telling me about it. And I was like, cool, I'll apply to that. That sounds fun. And I had that, like, little fire in my belly of, like, nerves and excitement. Like, yeah, you know, I want to go to the next level. And I accidentally just applied as, like, the regular. Like, I didn't do it as a marketing.
Yeah.
And I got in. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Forget hip hop. Let's, you know, full bore.
Yeah.
Though hip hop could have saved you some money.
Yeah, right. It was great. And I had great neighbors. I immediately, like, I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know. You know, like, my friend who's like, hey, let's do this farmer's market. And then, you know.
Exactly. Hey, baby steps.
You know,
saying baby steps is a lot nicer way to say it than what I said earlier, which was it's like a virus that just keeps getting stronger. But it really, you know, it kind of, you build on one thing. Is that where you met our good friend Betty Yeager?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. No. Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah. But then we got really close and connected because, you know, I was in my booth the whole time and I didn't get out much. But she, I may have this wrong, Betty, but I feel like maybe her first show was the Kohler Arts Center in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, which I did that show, but also would go to the show.
And yeah.
I scooped up a bunch of her earrings and totally fell in love with her. You know, God. And we've been friends ever since.
That's
yeah.
super cool.
And I feel like it was later on that she had said, like, that was my first time doing the show.
But well, she's getting ready to do her first. I got to give her a shout out because the last time I talked to her, she had not done a big art show yet. She's getting ready to do her first big art show back. She's doing Art a Whirl, which is a huge Minneapolis open studio tour that's coming up this coming weekend. It will have just passed when this airs, but wishing her huge luck there. I love Art a Whirl. It's so much fun.
Gosh, that makes me tempted to just drive there.
Like, you should go. Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, it's not too far. I mean,
being on the road, it's like 18 hours. Sure, that's fine. That's just 2 days.
God, it's just such a, like, all the breweries have, like, they have art shows within it. It's like it takes over the whole city, and it's such a cool event. It's like very Minneapolis, very Minnesota centric.
Yeah, yay. Yeah. But I also just want to go back just 1 second.
Please.
Just to also, like, what you're doing with emerging artists, or how you've talked with other artists in this podcast about how we share at shows, how we give to those coming underneath us that maybe want to know, like, come into your booth and be like, hey, I want to do this thing. Like, how do I get started or whatever? Those little seeds that you plant, I mean, it happens so much. Teachers do it every day with kids in schools, and, like, it means a lot. It may seem like the timing can be, you know, a little inconvenient or not or whatever, but we have a lot of, like, ability to grow people's lives and help, you know. It's fun.
It is fun. I mean, my big advice on people that have a hard time, like, when younger folks come in and start asking questions and they're like, and I've heard artists be like, oh, I hate it when people come in and be like, who are these kids? They're not buying. They're not whatever. But you can use those conversations. If you engage a young, you know, a teenage person who comes into your booth, or somebody young that has real questions about your work, you can use those conversations with them. Other people start to hear you talk, and you can talk about the work around other people. So it becomes part of the dynamic of your booth where you're just, and being positive and being encouraging and not being an asshole at shows is how we sell, you know?
And I think so too.
Right?
And I feel like, well, speaking to just my skill set of sewing, it's like a lost art, a lost skill. Like,
it is.
There are schools that have popped up for, like, you could take sewing classes, but not a lot. And parents, grandparents aren't, there isn't the tradition that I came from where my grandma taught me.
Right.
Kind of thing. And I hear stories about that. So I get young people in my booth with their parents and saying, like, oh, you know, so-and-so really wants to learn how to sew and what, or like, even like simple, like, how do I do this thing? And like going through like the pattern making process or whatever. And I think it's great because, I mean, I went through the art school thing. I carry a lot of that. Like at that time, my ed was really like a foundational program, like the Bauhaus school. Now right. It's changed okay. a lot and it's more interdisciplinary. But like conversations with Dylan that you've had, like all of that, all of those like the art school stuff, like yeah. I have all of that. I miss a lot of the making. I'm trying to build a studio now so I can get back to some other things too. And
right.
I see that next phase of for me, like I'm just like, oh, but anyway, side note, I just feel like it's specifically to me, I feel like being able to encourage young people to keep sewing. Like,
absolutely.
There's so much you can do with it. You know, functional doesn't need to be an artful making thing. It can just literally be like, repair your own clothes. Like,
yeah. change
the momentum of fast fashion and throwaway culture that we live in and make your own voice with it. Like, do, yeah. Yeah. So. I get excited.
I mean, I'm really attracted to it too because my mom is a huge sewer. She has she's always sewn clothes and she's a big quilter and she's actually gotten if she'd gone to school for it, she got involved with restoration of artifacts and she got to I mean she's sewn on some clothing that Betsy Ross originally made that's down in Williamsburg. She has learned that skill and sewing was always around me. Craft was always around us. They used to take us to art shows.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really like if she had been encouraged, she was like a, you know, she was a classic housewife, you know, conservative upbringing, stayed in the house and didn't really work. But if she'd been maybe a little bit, you know, she'd had maybe the outlet, she would have gone a different direction. I could definitely have seen it going that way. She loves craft. She loves sewing, I'm sure. Are you, you're not doing Baltimore ACC, are you?
I'm not this year.
No, there's no way in hell you'd be talking to me because it's this weekend. You'd be like, if I know for a fact you're not doing it.
I feel a little sad not doing it. I have mixed feelings, but yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting them moving it to the spring. It'll be interesting to be in the harbor and be able to sit outside and eat our crab cakes.
Is Susie doing it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going with her. I'm the plus one on that one.
Yay. So. Oh, have a great time. I know I'm a little bit bummed. It's been what now 3 years I haven't done that show.
It's a big part of her season. So I'm excited to go and sell some jewels. It'll be fun.
Good.
There's a couple other things I wanted to talk about that were just in my head. Yeah. I want to talk about your honey. I want to talk about Matthew Nafsker. He's one of my favorite humans. So,
the love of my life. Yeah.
He's such a good dude. He's a growing dude. And it's nice to see him with you and see him turning into who he is.
Thanks, Will. That means so much.
Definitely.
Yeah, we had one of those, like, love at first moments. Shout out to Reston, no longer Reston called, but yeah, where we both were like, whoa, that was the first time I met him.
Awesome. Yeah, it's tough too because I mean, like you and I both have exes that are like he has an ex that's still on the scene, and it's like it becomes part of the whole personality of the culture, and it seems like your life becomes intertwined with everybody else's, and people have their own opinions, and it's hard, but it seems like you guys have come out on the other side of it.
Well, I think like having a breathing period of no shows for a while helped at the time. That
for sure.
Seemed to be like more conflicty, but I've done shows, putting on my tent, lugging all my stuff around by myself for years now, like 5 years. So I think, I don't know, something like, it got a little blurry when I was like kind of mixing, doing the kids, you know, that little bit of transitional time. But so to go on the road, travel with him and be like booth neighbors and have this whole experience has been so much fun. It's really great. We travel together well.
That's great.
I'm learning to be a good passenger. I'm very much the controller, driver, always in every relationship I've ever had.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a good, like, I feel like we complement each other in a lot of ways.
Do you cram it all into one van now? Is it one
vehicle? And yeah, I have fantasies about like the camper and like, what's that going to be like?
I hate the camper.
He's a man of wheels. He loves his wheels. He has so many good ideas. I'm like, yeah, he still lives in a 24-hour day like we all do, unfortunately, because I think, there's never enough time to do all the things.
Absolutely. There's never enough time to do all the things.
We see each other kind of on the road. And that's what feels sad right now is because our schedules are just like all like in the studio when we're home. And we don't live together. He has his own house.
I was going to ask you about that, too. I think that's really smart. And the fact that you gave yourselves an opportunity to date, like you're still dating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun to miss him. I love missing him.
It's important.
I feel like it's a successful way of being in relationship for me.
Definitely.
That I haven't had. I've always been a jump in, let's move in together kind of like really like excited. Like, oh, I'm definitely a new relationship like kind of energy person.
In order to keep that fresh, and that's how you can kind of do it. And not get sick of each other. I mean,
I'm respectful of Xander too, and I feel like I take his well-being in mind for pretty much everything. I guess
for everything.
Everywhere that we cross over, I guess, is in our relationship as family. But yeah, and they're slowly building their relationship.
Nice.
And
I was going to ask they know each other now. It's part of the bigger circle.
Yeah.
Right?
And same with his dad, too. So it's been nothing but lovely. Yeah.
That's great. I admire that.
Matthew? He's such a good person.
He is. He really is.
To know Matthew is to love Matthew.
It's true. And we just saw The Northman, and there's a psychotic side of Matthew with the Willem Dafoe creature when he's got his long beard. And he's like, looking. I was like, we're both watching it. And we're like, are you picking up NASCAR elements here? Like, because there's...
Oh, such the best beard. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a good.
He did cut it pretty short during COVID times. And it was like, he's still cutie face, but it was like, wow, that's so different.
Definitely. That's awesome. Well, we've covered a lot. This has been a really great, energizing talk for me. And I appreciate you so much.
Good too. I'm glad we finally got to do this. I know my schedule's been bonkers and everything.
And I feel like we've covered a lot, but is there anything else you want to talk about? Anything we didn't cover?
I think of things later, like, oh, I really, because I feel like a lot of people don't know me, or there's assumptions about being a person who's like a wearable fiber maker. And
there,
like,
are. What are the assumptions about fiber? Like, what's hard about, what's different about your line of work that people don't know? Like, I liked it. Like, I know jewelry really well because of my partner.
Yeah.
But what do people not know about fiber?
That it's art.
Yeah. Huge.
I hear just the conversations that seem like they're really hush hush going by the booth. Like, oh, is this art? You know? And adornment is a part of all our expression as human beings from the very beginning of time, you know, same with jewelry, same with every way that we present ourselves. And then when we can't do that, then we put it out there on any kind of surface, right? So we're always expressing ourselves, our experiences, the world around us. And I feel like wearables, making cloth, which is what I feel like I do. The other thing that might be important, that if people don't know this already, but I use all Design House End fabric. So every piece of fabric I get is deemed unusable because it's leftover. So it's like a production run has happened, and then this is like doomed for landfill, or it's considered garbage. And so that's the only kind of fabric that I use, and I don't buy anything online. Like, I have to see it and touch it and know how it drapes and know the quality and all of that stuff. So that's a huge part of what I'm doing too, is a sustainability of practice and of also like sourcing material. And that's a huge, and I love designing in that restraint. So that's the other part of the building, is like, I'm literally like building the fabrics. So some people say, oh, you must be a quilter, or you could be whatever. And I'm like, you know, I've never made a quilt, but that would be really fun. I think that would be the next level place that I could go with something like that. But
That's really interesting. You know, another thing that you have in common with jewelry, not just the, I'll say design and not fashion, even though it's very fashionable, is that it's so super hands-on, not just in the creation of it, because obviously it's the creation, but the getting people to buy it is so hands-on. You cannot leave your booth and sell.
Yeah. And it's really, and besides, like, some, I think it's the only, it's very intimate. And there's so much built up. So the second a woman crosses the threshold of my booth and is faced with like, what size am I? Is this going to fit me? Am I vulnerable enough to try it on? There is so much that and I can see it. Some people jump in, they're like, dress me up. And some people are like, oh, and those are the ones where I'm just like, I mean, I have to create a safe space, an inviting space, but also a safe space, because there's so much baggage with women and their bodies and like all the things.
Yeah,
so
that's huge.
That's a huge part that doesn't exist in any other that I can think of for categories in the art festivals. That is like such an intimate thing that way. Jewelry, for sure.
For sure,
hands-on, and you're close contact, but
and you know what? If it's hot, your fingers might swell a little bit, but when it's hot, like that can kill your entire weekend. Like, if it's going to be 90 plus, I can imagine you in Des Moines, or some of these shows where, I don't know why I don't want to pick on Des Moines, but it's like, I just feel like that's the hottest I've ever been in my entire life. 3 or 4 years ago, I wanted to die.
I wasn't there that year.
I was like, I think I'm actually dying. Like, I'm dying. I feel like I smell like ground beef at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah. Ooh. And then like, or, you know, your Ann Arbor's, like I've said it before, but like, it's hotter than the surface of the sun. If it's like 109, but nobody's trying on jackets.
Yeah. Nobody wants, they're like, I'm too sweaty. And I'm like, I'm free, or, ooh. Yeah.
It's not scarves, you know, at least it's not scarves and hats and knitted stuff, but it's still, it's just an added element where it's like, well, yeah, it'll kill you if it's raining, but if it's raining in 100 degrees, or if it's 100 degrees and sunny, if it's whatever, there's so many little variables, and you have to be on all the time. Yeah. Are you an extrovert all the time, or are you extra intro?
I am. I definitely love the solitude of the studio, but then that's just the other place, right?
Yes.
Like, I'm just totally focused on what I'm doing.
So after a big show, like a charged up show, and you've had a killer day, you're ready to go. You're like, you feel amped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm pretty much across the board extrovert.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Yeah.
My poor baby. She's such an introvert, as far as like, it's so depleting. Like, the humans are so depleting. So it's interesting. I don't think you'd be into it if you have that.
I feel for her. And it's been so long since I've seen her. So give her some squeezes for me.
But I will.
I feel for those folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ones that are just like, oh God.
It's a different personality type. We all get by. We figured it out.
I feel like it's fun to know the some of the differences that happen within each of our mediums, and like the things that you don't know or like never took the time to know. Like, I feel like when you talk to Deb about like what it means to just like cart around your whole like thousands of dollars worth of, like, oh, you know, it's right. like so much. Like, to I kind of knew that, but then I didn't. Like, I just didn't take it far enough to realize, like, what that really looks like.
Yeah, $100,000 backpack in the bar.
Yeah.
I mean, you know?
That's
I'm going to start wearing my my six shooters real low. Good Wild West on it. I'm not. Yeah. Everyone calm down. Oh, man. Thank you so much for talking to me. This has been a blast. I love you. You're amazing. Go kiss that man of yours full on the mouth and say it's for me and make him feel super awkward.
Wait, make him feel super awkward?
Just make it weird. That's all I'm asking. Just make it weird.
I'm off that challenge.
It just, yeah, just look, and be like, oh, Will said this is for you. And then look at him real long in the eyes and then just kiss him full on the mouth.
I feel like I have to have something awkward and weird in my mouth. Like when I do that.
Just pass him a penny. I don't know. Something.
Like a dill pickle slice?
Yes, that's even better. Like a little Lego man? Something. All right, Annie. We'll talk to you soon. I can't wait to see you. All right, take care.
Aww, you too.
Bye.
Bye, sweetheart.
Bye. Thanks again.
Man, I just love Annie Bisogni. I will love it even more when I get to hear it, but thanks for sitting down and talking to her, Will.
Yeah, you will love it. Trust me. You know, you can say it after the fact. You can say you love her. I do too. She's an incredible human.
Yeah.
So, just one of those people. I was joking with her when we were talking about this being our, like, if you look at our season as one, this is like the kindness section of the show where we talk to Whipple right into Annie. It is inspirational to me just to be able to talk to good people like that.
Totally. Well, good people coming up next time, too. We've got a good friend of mine, Tom Wargen, Mr. Muscle Man himself and his big strongman sculptures. That's who we're talking to next time here on the pod.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing you talk with Tom. I actually don't know him that well, so it'll be a nice introduction for all of us. Hey, folks, be safe out there on the road. I hope you make $1 million and cancel all the rest of your summer shows. I hope.
And remember to pack your COVID test.
Pack your COVID test and your sweatpants, and we'll see you on the road.
All right, take care, everyone.
This podcast is brought to you by the National Association of Independent Artists. The website is naiaartists.org.
Also sponsored by Zapplication. That's zapplication.org. And while you're at it, check out Will's website at willarmstrongart.com and my website at sigwithglass.com.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast to be notified when we release new episodes.